A new memo out this week from the nonpartisan Legislative Fiscal Bureau estimates what sweeping changes to the food stamp program could mean for people in Wisconsin. The analysis comes after the draft 2018 Farm Bill was released last month. Wisconsin would lose almost $24 million in food stamp benefits compared to last year. We're talking about the repercussions on the state's food share program here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Laurel White is Wisconsin Public Radio's state capitol reporter. Laurel, thanks so much for being here.
Absolutely, Kate. Thanks for having me.
So what does legislation on Capitol Hill do that changes who is eligible for food assistance here in Wisconsin?
So what this bill would do, it's part of the proposed federal farm bill, is it would change the eligibility requirements for food stamps in a number of states around the country. So a number of states, including Wisconsin, currently allow people who qualify for programs that are funded by the Temporary Assistance for Needy Families program, also called TANF, to automatically get food stamps because of their eligibility for that other program. But under this bill, it removes that automatic link. So states like Wisconsin would be barred from providing food stamps to those individuals.
But they would need to go through further paperwork in order to get benefits?
That's right. So some of the proponents of this bill are saying, yes, those individuals would be removed from the rolls because that automatic link would be gone, but they could reapply for food stamps, and as long as they met certain asset requirements, they would be able to get back on the food stamp rolls. So supporters are saying people who really need food stamps are going to be able to keep them, but opponents are saying we shouldn't have people having to jump through extra hoops and kind of go through that paperwork again when they've already been deemed worthy of the benefits recently.
So then a memo emerges this week from the Legislative Fiscal Bureau that details the numbers here in Wisconsin. What does it look like if members of Congress make this change?
So for Wisconsin specifically, it's looking like there are going to be about 76,000 people who would be pushed off the food stamp rolls. And the specific population that Democrats were really focusing on this week were children. So of that 76,000, 23,000 would be children in Wisconsin.
And what about the cost share of government food assistance? Who pays for it?
So this is an interesting element that kind of came up. Obviously, these are state lawmakers that are holding this press conference and really pushing back on the federal policy. But state money isn't really involved in food stamps for the most part. The state shares about 50-50 with the federal government on administering food stamps. But the actual cost to pay for them is from the federal government entirely.
And this memo details tens of thousands of Wisconsinites would lose food stamps under the new plan. So how did they come up with these numbers? How did that come to exist?
So sometimes in the state legislature, if somebody is looking for some more details about a particular proposal, the fiscal impact, they'll reach out to what's called the Legislative Fiscal Bureau. It's the legislature's nonpartisan budget office, and they write memos of things like this. So Democrats, in this case, reached out to the Fiscal Bureau and said, we're really interested in the number of Wisconsinites that would be pushed off the plan based on this federal policy. So the LFB wrote this memo based on numbers that the State Department of Health Services had actually already gathered, which doesn't always happen, but that did happen in this case, and those numbers were gathered in the fall of 2017. So they were able to pull directly from that. They also compared it to a separate analysis that wasn't done by the state, by another outside entity, and found that to be pretty consistent with what the state had said.
So Democrats request this information. The Legislative Fiscal Bureau, which is a nonpartisan entity, crunches the numbers. So is this partisan data, or is it an independent analysis? And how do we know that?
Well, the Legislative Fiscal Bureau in Wisconsin is known to be nonpartisan. So It's one of the entities, the agencies that we really count on in the state of Wisconsin to not have any sort of partisan leaning. So that is something that we can count on in this case, that it's an independent analysis of the impact of the decision. And this is something that, you know, the policy writers in Washington are acknowledging, that some people are going to be pushed off food stamp rolls. But they say that's kind of a necessary thing, and the reapplication could be facilitated to make sure that everybody that needs food stamps can get them. So the policy implications aren't necessarily under debate. This is just giving us some more solid numbers to work with.
Laurel White is with us. She's WPR's State Capitol reporter, talking about the Legislative Fiscal Bureau's analysis on the draft 2018 Farm Bill. Democratic state lawmakers say the federal legislation could result in 23,400 children in Wisconsin losing access to food share benefits. So, Laurel, Democrats held this news conference about the memo and what the memo detailed. Who was there? What was their message?
So we had a couple prominent Democratic lawmakers, Senate Minority Leader, rather, Jennifer Schilling, who's a Democrat from La Crosse, spoke at the press conference. There was also a Madison Democrat, a representative in the Assembly, Lisa Stubeck, and then a representative from a statewide advocacy group called the Hunger Task Force that works on issues like food stamp provision to people across Wisconsin. And they really focused on, as I said, you know, the impact on children. So those 23,000 children that would be pushed off food stamp rolls, and the effect that it would have on them in school, their performance in school, their general well-being, and how that could impact, you know, things further out, like preparing the next generation of workers for Wisconsin, things like that.
And it was Schilling who requested this analysis?
Right, right. I mean, they're pretty transparent about that. So when they released the memo from the Legislative Fiscal Bureau, it says, at the request of Senate Minority Leader Jennifer Schilling. So we knew absolutely that Democrats in Wisconsin had requested the memo to get Wisconsin-specific information.
Have we heard from any Republican leaders about what the change means for Wisconsin families?
We haven't heard from any Wisconsin legislators on the state level to respond to this particular memo. I think that the message from Republicans on Capitol Hill in D.C. Is consistent with what Wisconsin lawmakers have said about some of the changes they've pushed here in the state, which is Republicans really support adding additional accountability and just making sure that these government-backed programs are going to the people that really need them, and that they're temporary assistance. And as Governor Walker says frequently, he wants these programs to be more of a trampoline rather than a hammock. So a temporary bit of help, not something people rely on for a long time.
Yeah, help us connect the dots here, because state lawmakers have made changes to assistance programs here in Wisconsin, and Governor Walker called that special session for a welfare reform package. So how would those changes be rolled in or interplay there with the federal changes at the federal level?
So this has been a really big deal in Wisconsin. This has been a major priority of Governor Walker. He introduced a package of 10 bills focused on the state's welfare system in January, and 9 of those ended up passing the state legislature this spring and have been signed into law and are on their way to implementation in various stages. But what some of those bills do is increase work requirements for food stamps. So people who were previously required to work 20 hours a week or be in job training 20 hours a week now have to do that for 30 hours a week. It expanded those requirements to adults with children. Previously, they were exempt if they had children under a certain age. And it also introduces some new asset requirements. So people who have a car that's worth a certain amount of money would no longer be able to receive food stamps. There was another proposal, interestingly, that didn't make it all the way through the legislature that would have implemented a photo ID on food stamps in Wisconsin, food stamp redemption cards. So this is something that certainly has been a priority for state Republicans and now national Republicans. And so all these proposals, as they go into effect, if they go into effect, are certainly going to dovetail together and accomplish the goal that Republicans have sought, which is, you know, making sure that people on these programs really, really need them.
Laurel, thanks for joining us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Laurel White is Wisconsin Public Radio's State Capitol reporter. Follow her on Twitter at LKWhite. We've been talking about the Legislative Fiscal Bureau's analysis on the draft 2018 Farm Bill. Gathering your questions, your personal perspectives are welcome. 800-642-1234. Do you see food assistance as a partisan issue? Where do you draw the line between fiscal responsibility and programs that get people basic needs? Call and tweet us, WPR Mornings. We'll be back after a news update on the Ideas Network. The draft farm bill under consideration in the House would bring sweeping changes to nutrition program eligibility. Here in Wisconsin, the nonpartisan Legislative Fiscal Bureau crunched the numbers on the draft that came out last month. The legislation would cut almost $24 million from funding that supports food assistance programs here in Wisconsin. We're exploring the impact on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's bring in Julia Isaacs now. She's a visiting scholar at the UW Institute for Research on Poverty. She's an Urban Institute senior fellow and an expert on poverty here in Wisconsin and food assistance. Julia, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Kate. Thanks for inviting me to join you.
Well, let's start with the basics. People can qualify for food stamps in a couple of ways. They're either part of so-called assistance groups or they fit a category for fit a category for eligibility. Can you break down for us how you qualify if you reside in an assistance group?
So we can just use the word household for assistance group. That will make it easier.
Great.
If you're in a household, actually everybody who applies for food stamps needs to document how much income they have to make sure it's below certain levels so you can get on the program. And also, the amount of food stamps or SNAP benefits, you can use either word, the amount of food stamps depends on the level of your income.
And then what about the categorical eligibility? What does that mean?
Yeah, so this gets a little complicated, but people who are categorically eligible, that means they're already on another program like TANF, which gives cash assistance. So I want to clarify that those people also have to provide information about their income because we need to know how much income people have in order to figure out whether they get $50, $100, $200 a month in SNAP benefits. The difference is that the program is trying to modernize and really support working poor people because people, you know, the low-wage labor market is not very good. And so there are people who are poor and working. And what this, it's called, it's very complicated. It's called broad-based categorical eligibility. Mm. What it does is it says if you earn a little bit more, you can still remain on the program a little bit longer. Your benefits go down, your income goes up, but it eliminates what we call a benefit cliff, where suddenly you earn 50 cents more an hour and you lose all benefits. That's what would happen if this categorical eligibility was eliminated.
What do we know, Julia, about the working poor here in Wisconsin? What can you tell us in terms of what it's like here in Wisconsin? And does Wisconsin follow in line with other states?
Well, one thing, we know a number of things about the working poor. We know that jobs in the low-wage labor market often have variable hours, so that one week you might be working 15 hours and the next week you might be working 25 hours. And I mentioned that, because you work different hours, so your food stamps might change a little bit over time. We also know that the work is, you might lose your job for a period of time. You often usually don't have sick leave or vacation time, so it's fairly unstable. And people who are working low-wage jobs often aren't making enough to support their family. And so food stamps help supplement that for the working poor. And it also, I'll say, it serves as those of us that have better jobs usually can get unemployment insurance if we lose our job. A lot of the working poor don't qualify for unemployment insurance. So if they lose their job for 2 or 3 months, they turn to food stamps, particularly in those months before they go back to work.
So if the Capitol Hill legislation becomes law, about 76,000 Wisconsinites no longer qualify for food stamps, what would that do? What would that look like?
Yeah, and can I just add that that memo analyzes one piece of the farm bill,
uh-huh.
and so that 76,000 number would be, I don't know, 2 to 3 to 4 times larger if the bill had, because of other provisions. But that particular provision would, as you say, knock off, the provision of categorical eligibility would eliminate benefits to 76,000 people. For those people, most of whom are working poor because they're a little bit above destitute poverty, they have a little bit more, what would happen to them is they would lose their food stamps, which means it's harder to pay your groceries, which means you have to get behind on your rent. You have to do, I mean, you're already doing a balancing act, but if you don't have extra funds for groceries, you just have less funds overall and have to make some cutbacks and sometimes get behind on your rent or behind on your, even further behind on your utilities, or you eat less.
Let's bring Rose in. Rose joining us from Cumberland with her story. Go ahead, Rose.
Hi.
Yeah, go ahead.
So my family has been on state aid for a while. We went back to school to get a higher education, so we don't have to be on food assistance. We do have a disabled son, but we have lost our food stamps even before this bill. And because of that, I've had to pick up another job. And since I make more money, we've lost our daycare assistance, so I had to pick up another job. So between my husband and I, we're still low income. We're still in the poverty line, but we have to work 5 jobs to compensate for all of this, which is taking time away from our children and our basic family. And it's so frustrating that these legislators don't know what it's like to struggle and have to work extra jobs to pay extra bills because we're trying, but it's just, it's a horrible, vicious cycle. I don't think food stamps really needs to be cut like it is with the farm bill. They just need to be regulated more, like the WIC program. You can get a certain amount of stuff with your money. Because I work at a retail store, and I see people coming in buying energy drinks and pop and gum with their food stamps, and it just makes me so sad because it's like, I have to work another job to feed my family, so I don't even get to see them half the time. It's so frustrating that they don't understand what it's like
in
these people's shoes.
What I'm hearing from you is as you pick up another job and another job, you disqualify yourself more and more from being able to get the help you need?
Exactly, yep. And because I was in school full time, they only covered about a third of my daycare bill. So I had to pick up another job. So I would work before I go to school, after I go to school. I would work 6 in the morning to 8 o'clock at night. And it's so frustrating that they don't get it, and they just kind of just don't care. It's all about the numbers, and it's really frustrating that they don't understand.
About the numbers, it's about the numbers, not about the people. Julia Isaacs, what do you make of Rose's story?
Well, I feel some, it's working 5 jobs across 2 adults is sounds very stressful, and adding in school on top of that. I work on children's development and child poverty, and when we think of what children need, well, I mean, one thing is the resources. So obviously parents, you know, are picking up extra jobs so that they can provide children with the resources they need, financial resources, economic resources, food. But children also need parents who are not totally stressed out. When parents are juggling many things, or if they're uncertain if they're going to lose food stamps, I worry about the loss of food to the children, but I also worry about the stress on the parents, and then what that does to, it's harder to run your family well the way you want to, and to give your children the parenting you want when you're facing lots of stresses at work and and every place else.
So why are states currently allowed to offer automatic food stamp benefits to families eligible for other support programs like TANF? Is it about streamlining or helping people, or is there another reason going on?
So let me jump off that word streamlining. It's important to, you know what people's family income is so we can figure out if they need more or less food stamps. But if you eliminate categorical eligibility, you also need to look at the value of their car and make sure that their car isn't worth more than $4,500, and if it is, tell them they can't get food stamps. So that's what streamlining means. It means with categorical eligibility, Wisconsin's one of the many states that has decided we don't want to spend caseworker time getting the exact value of everyone's car. If they have one car that gets them to and from work, we don't want to disqualify them from food stamps.
So are there other stipulations like your car that are certainly factoring into this formula beyond your actual base income?
Right. So if we get rid of categorical eligibility, the broad-based categorical eligibility, you'll also have to make sure you know exactly how much savings everyone has. Most people who are walking into the social services agency and asking for food stamp assistance do not have large bank accounts. But you still would have to, it's just an extra piece of paperwork bringing in. And if you've closed your bank account because you don't have any money in it, you might have to then show it's closed. So that's the additional types of paperwork, the car, the assets test. Streamlining that paperwork allows the program to spend. It's better for program administration, which, as your reporter pointed out, we in Wisconsin pay 50% of the administrative costs. And so the reason states like Wisconsin want to streamline is it saves some administrative costs in the program.
Julie Isaacs is with us. She's a visiting scholar at the UW Institute for Research on Poverty. She's an Urban Institute Senior Fellow. You can join in the conversation, 800-642-1234. Are you a teacher or school administrator? Perhaps you're a social worker. How do you see the potential for fewer food stamp benefits affecting the young people you work with, your clients? You can call in. You can also tweet us at WPR Mornings. Julia, recent efforts are focused on changes including work requirements. House Speaker Paul Ryan mentioned this earlier this week at the Weekly Standards Midwest Conservative Summit. Let's take a listen to his take.
We believe that able-bodied people who are receiving welfare benefits ought to go to work or at least go to school as a condition of getting those benefits. Because what we realize is when you do that, people go to work, people go to school, people get out of poverty.
So what do you make of that? Is that the fix there, work requirements?
Well, I'm glad you brought up the work requirements, because when I mentioned that there are provisions in the bill that would cut off twice as many people as this categorical eligibility, it is the work requirements. So I do see work as a good way out of poverty for people. I think if you're elderly or disabled, or if you're a child, we wouldn't want you working. And it's important to recognize how many people on food stamps are elderly, disabled, or children. We don't want children working. So when you look at the non-elderly adults on food stamps, half of them are working. When you look at whether they were working in the course of a year, 80% of them were working either the year before or after. So yes, I think we should think of food stamps as supporting work. And the way to support working families is not to add additional requirements. And I could say one more thing. It's just that the new work requirements that are imposed imposed if this bill were passed would require that the state keeps track of everyone who's on food stamps keeps track whether their hours per week drop below 20 hours. And if it is, they could be sanctioned and lose their benefits. So it's just a huge bureaucratic tracking system. And I was explaining how many people in a low-wage working they may have 20 hours one week, 25 another, and then 15. So it's very inefficient to track exactly, does everyone have 20 hours every week.
And what about the children in those families? Is it that everyone qualifies or no one qualifies in the family? How does that work?
Well, they are trying to protect children. And so the way the bill would work is that the sanction would apply to the adult and not the, you wouldn't lose all of your benefits. So let's imagine you're working and you get this notice in the mail that it looks like you didn't work enough hours last week. And let's just imagine you're like me and you don't answer your mail within 3 days. And then next thing you know, your food stamp benefit is cut by a third because you were one of, you got two kids and you know, they cut off your piece. Then you'd have to go in and try to say, wait, I was working. So that's what I mean by the paperwork. And it's true, you wouldn't lose 100%. Your family would get some of its benefits, but you would suddenly see it go down, and you might not even know why if you couldn't understand the notice that the agency sent you.
Do we know or have an average of the amount of money we're talking about on average for food stamps per month?
So it depends on your income. I'm gonna toss out a number of $250 a month for a family of three, but I should probably look that up.
So we've mentioned 23,000 of those who would be ineligible for food stamps in Wisconsin are children. Why does it matter that a third of the recipients are kids?
Right, and it's a third who would lose eligibility. It's actually
under
the overall program. It's even more. It's like 40% are kids. So, well, there's many reasons we care. One is I think that whatever you think about people, their work ethic, you want children to be protected. I would just hope for humanitarian reasons. But in addition, a reason to care about children in poverty is you think of the long-term effects of poverty. When children don't have enough food to eat, or when their parents are so stressed that they're having troubles managing the household, children's academic performance suffers. And there we've seen long-term negative effects of poverty on children's graduation. You know, let's start with how ready you are for kindergarten.
Mm-hmm.
Poor kids don't know as many words. And then where you are in third grade and where you're in high school. So we see throughout school that the kids who have less income aren't doing as well. But the other thing I want to add, we've also seen that getting additional assistance, whether it's food stamps or the Earned Income Tax Credit, people have been able to measure the positive effects on children's test scores when there's, let's just say for some reason, there's a change in law and there's a higher supplement. The extra resources translate into better math and reading scores on average, not for every kid, but on average for kids.
Let's bring in Chad waiting in Madison. Go ahead, Chad.
Hi, I just had a quick comment about what we're talking about here. Me and the girlfriend both have full-time jobs, and we struggle somewhat to try to make it by. And it seems like that the state would rather aid the people that would rather sit at home, do nothing, and take advantage of the system rather than the people that are out there working their butts off and trying to actually make something themselves, just like people going to school. Like, they should help them more than somebody that would rather just sit at home and do nothing and just collect this state money. But with this new bill that was passed, it's actually, I think, a step in the right direction with that. I also think that they should do something like drug testing for people that get state aid, because I know there's many people out there that sell their food stamps and waste their food stamps on junk.
And Chad, we're going to pause right there. And Julia, I'll have you be able to comment right after the news here. Talking with Julia Isaacs here from the visiting scholar at the UW Institute for Research on Poverty. And you can join in the conversation, 800-642-1234. We'll pick it up after a news update here on the Ideas Network. Stay with us. Some of the arguments in favor of reining in food stamps under the draft farm bill is this notion that SNAP is too generous at the end of the day, that food is generally accessible, that families will find a way to get meals. We're talking about the impact of the draft bill on Wisconsin families here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. A memo was released this week by the Legislative Fiscal Bureau. It crunched the numbers on what it would mean to have a lower income threshold to automatically qualify and enroll for assistance programs. Julia Isaac stays with us. She is a visiting scholar at the UW Institute for Research on Poverty, gathering your questions and personal perspectives as well at 800-642-1234. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Julia, before we went to the news break, Chad called in and had a whole lot of perceptions that he has about people who receive SNAP benefits. What would you say to Chad's comments?
Well, I know that when you're working, when you and your partner are working two full-time jobs and also trying to raise a family, that you're working very hard. And you do wonder, is somebody else getting a pass that I'm not getting? So I understand that concern. The reality is that the people that would lose benefits when we with this change in the Farm Bill, are most of them are working. And so they are working their jobs. If you're a single mom working a full-time job at $12.50 an hour, you might get $150 a month from SNAP. So you are working full-time, you get $12.50 an hour, and it's not enough to feed if you have two kids. And so the SNAP extra $100 a month doesn't cover your $100 a month. Remember, that what is that, $25 a week? That does not cover your grocery bill. But it just helps a little bit. And so those are the people who would be cut off if their income went up a little bit and they got maybe $13 an hour, and then they would lose all their benefits. That's the change we're talking about.
Let's go to Stacy now, joining us from Spooner. Hi, Stacy.
Hi. Hello?
Hi, go ahead, Stacy.
Okay, so I'm a single parent. But I was raised by my grandparents, so I don't like to be on assistance. But when my daughter was about 2 years old, I went on assistance simply because of the fact that I was working a full-time job and two part-time jobs. I got up at 5 o'clock in the morning, dropped my daughter off to daycare at 6, and I worked until 11 o'clock at night. My daughter stopped sleeping because the only time she got to see me was when we were asleep. So I made a tough decision and said, you know what, my sanity, my daughter's well-being is worth more than my pride. So I quit my full-time job, took on another part-time job. I have never worked less than three part-time jobs while I have been on assistance. And when my daughter was old enough to understand that sometimes mom has to go to work. So from the time that she was about 2 years old till the time she was 10 years old, we were on assistance. I got medical assistance, I got food stamps, and I got daycare assistance for her. When she aged out of daycare, I took on another job. I now have four part-time jobs. Why? Because every time I turn around, something is being taken away from me, either the food stamps or the rent assistance or something. And finally, I was like, you know what? I can't do this anymore. This is ridiculous. I have got to get off food stamps. It was supposed to be a temporary thing. And so I got a good enough job that I could have one job, have health care, and not be on assistance. And I get that there are some people who are looking at people on assistance saying, oh, my God, like, you know, get a job. I had three jobs at one time so that I could try and make it. And I finally got four jobs because that's what it took to get off assistance. Why, as a single parent, should I have to work four jobs because I am deathly afraid, you know, that my daughter's not going to have enough to eat? And I don't get, like, child support. Like, there is no child support money coming in.
Stacy.
So it's like...
Thank you so much for telling your story and going into those details. Julia Isaacs, what do you see there?
Well, I just see that being a working parent is very challenging, and the decisions you're making about you need to pay the rent and you need to bring in financial resources. You also, your child cannot raise herself. You need to spend time with your child, which is true of So I just hear people, this is a prime example of trying to balance everything as a working parent. And so I think food stamps is providing a little bit of extra help with the groceries. It's still very hard. When you're on food stamps, most people on food stamps, it's not, you would, people would rather not be on food stamps and rather get a better job. So that I'm not sure we need to make the system more onerous to give people more incentive. There's already a very large incentive to get off food stamps and get a better job so you can improve life for yourself and your kids.
Well, it seems, too, that Stacy said every time she turned around, it was another hole she had to plug, like something else was being taken away. So her immediate reaction was, I got to get another job. I got to get another job to plug those holes in her income.
Yes, it's we're in a little bit of a catch-22 because we want to give more benefits to people with less income. And then as people work their way off of benefits, we take the benefits away so that then we're spending less taxes for those of us that are working two jobs and not on benefits. So it's a catch-22. We don't want to, you know, have people lose benefits too early. On the other hand, the idea is that you eventually work your way off benefits.
Let's go
so
to
it's challenging.
Let's go to Annette joining us from Oshkosh. Hi, Annette.
Hi. Thank you for having this program. I deal with this every day, not really at the federal level, but the state level. If there's somebody that they deem can work and no health care doctor will sign off on a form, they don't get their food benefit anymore. And a lot of these people are disabled mentally or physically. So it's just amazing to me that I, as a Wisconsin state taxpayer, can subsidize a Taiwanese billionaire for $2.5 billion. And you're going to worry about somebody getting $48 a week for food. It's just appalling to me. And I think as a more of a systemic problem, why are we even having this discussion? People calling in, slamming on the poor. Why are we not looking at people that are making $65 million a year and not paying their employees? And why is the minimum wage not enough to live on? I just think as a country, we do horrible that somebody cannot live and support their family on what we pay them now when you have people making this kind of money.
And we're so, and Annette is bringing up some fundamental issues with income inequality in America and this growing segment of the working poor, Julia.
Right. So, and it is helpful. One could think of food stamps as a Band-Aid. You know, if we lived in a different world, maybe we wouldn't need as much food stamps if there was less inequality. I hesitate to use the word Band-Aid because it makes one think we don't need it. But given the state of inequality and the conditions of the low-wage labor market, a lot of families do rely on food stamps to help buy their groceries.
You've worked on the Wisconsin Poverty Project, the project from UW-Madison's Institute for Research on Poverty. It focuses on gaining a more accurate and timely assessment of poverty in the state. Why is it important for us to know the facts when we're trying to address poverty?
Well, I hope the facts are important in all of our policy decisions, that we look at the evidence. I think the evidence about poverty, your question is why is it important to know about poverty?
Yeah, and how has the Wisconsin Poverty Project, seen poverty in a new light?
So one of the things that the Wisconsin Poverty Measure does is it actually looks at people's food stamps and says, well, if you have food stamps, that's a resource you can use. And so let's look at poverty counting food stamps as a resource, not just look at people's cash income, but also look at their taxes, their tax credits, look at the taxes they lose and their tax credits and their food stamps. And when we do that, we find that food stamps helps lift some families out of poverty.
But not all the time.
Not all the time. Some families remain in poverty, and some families with the food stamps, they're just out of poverty, which is good. They're still struggling to get by.
Do you see...
Remember, the poverty line is so low that you can be above poverty. You know, you have more than $2,000 a month, but you still are... the food stamps is still helpful to help pay the groceries.
Do Do you see any sort of solution to the issues we're having here with food insecurity for children and adults and families? Where do we go from here?
So I worked on a project that was trying to modernize food stamps in six states. And we looked, we had conservative states like Idaho, and we had Illinois, and we had Rhode Island, South Carolina, North Carolina, Colorado. I'm trying to say blue and red states, a diversity of states. And they all were trying to modernize food stamps. And the way you do that is you don't add more paperwork requirements. You try to streamline it so that you aren't spending a lot of state money trying to put false paperwork up to stop people from getting what they need. And you make it so that working poor families can get food stamps. And you also, I guess you don't have to do a lot to give people incentives to get off food stamps. People don't like swiping that card through and having people judge whether they're buying an extra power drink instead of a juice. People have enough incentives to get off food stamps, so what I think we'd want to do is to modernize it and keep the delivery of food stamps sort of straightforward. So when you lose your job, if you need extra help, you get food stamps, and then you have plenty of incentive on your own to get rid of food stamps and really get a better job.
Well, Julia, thank you so much for talking to us today. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Julia Isaacs is a visiting scholar at the UW Institute for Research on Poverty. She's an Urban Institute Senior Fellow, and she's an expert on child poverty and food assistance. We started the hour with Laurel White, WPR's State Capitol reporter. We've been looking at what proposed changes to the federal farm bill could have on SNAP benefits and on Wisconsin families. This hour, the morning show was produced by Keely Baltina and the Ideas Network director, Cheryl Gasser. Michael Derringer provided technical direction. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and this conversation comes to you on the Ideas Network. Stay with us.